Welcome, Fat Cutters, to another edition of Cut the Fat Podcast. My name is Blythe Alberg, and I am joined here in the virtual studio with my partner, Dr. Ray Heinisch. Hi, Ray.
Hello, everybody. Yep, it's a good day here in Maryland. How's it over there in Florida?
Well, Panama City Beach is beachy weather today, 75 degrees, sunny, slight breeze. It's wonderful.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
It's great.
All right. So in today's show, what do we got planned?
We are going to be talking about 6 tactics for controlling hunger. And these are like smart tactics. I want to call them smart tactics because it's not ways to curb your appetite and put off the signals of what your body's telling you. It's ways to recognize the hunger signals and ways to keep yourself from getting hungry prematurely.
Awesome. Great. And, you know, I guess we should start by talking about how when we're talking about weight loss, basically you can look at what you eat or you can look at how much you move and how much activity you have in your life. Now, hands down, without a doubt, the most important factor is going to be the food that you put in your mouth, right?
Correct. Yes. 110%. We agree on that.
And so there are basically only 4 reasons why we eat food. Number one is hunger, right? You feel hunger pangs. And we just recently posted on Facebook a question. What's the difference between hunger and cravings? And most people said that basically hunger is in the stomach, cravings are in the brain, right?
Okay. Yeah.
You can be in a state where you're not very hungry and you can still have cravings for something. A lot of us, after we have a big dinner, we may not feel hungry, but we may still go on to eat the dessert, not necessarily because of the hunger, but because we crave something sweet, right?
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
So Most of us can relate.
Hunger is the first reason why we eat. The second reason is boredom, right? How often are we sitting in the office and we really don't have much to do or we're bored with the work, and so we go over to the candy machine and grab a candy bar or a bag of chips or something just simply out of boredom, right? Food.
That's that whole, like, the eating out of boredom is that whole, like, mindless eating where you're not paying attention to what you're really doing. It's just to give your hand and mouth something to do, right?
Right. And food is the fastest path to changing our state, right? We yes. know hands down that if we are feeling bored or not feeling good about ourselves, we can change that state simply by eating a big, you know, caramel sundae, right?
There you go.
And you instantly feel better. Now, that feeling better doesn't last forever, but doesn't last long at all. In fact, sometimes 1 minute later, you're feeling worse about yourself for eating the sundae.
Right. The whole guilt factor sets in.
Right. But that is a reason why we do eat, boredom. Mm-hmm. The third is availability. If food is present, if you have a bowl of candy on your desk, the research shows you're going to eat it. Right.
Right. Right. If you don't have it there, you probably won't go seek it out.
Exactly. You know, we're somewhat lazy creatures. And even in studies where they've placed the bowl, the candy bowl, 6 feet away from the desk instead of on the desk itself, people consumed far less candy than if it were just within arm's reach.
Isn't that funny?
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
and then the fourth reason we eat is cravings, right? We have a specific desire for a specific flavor or food, whether it be salty food, sugary foods, fatty food, or whatever, right?
Right, your favorite restaurant maybe.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily hunger per se. It's not necessarily boredom or just the availability, but we have a craving for something. Sometimes I'll feel a craving for an Oreo McFlurry, right? Mm-hmm. That's like one thing where I would literally just want an Oreo McFlurry. A candy bar, a Snickers bar wouldn't do it. A bag of chips wouldn't do it. It's just this craving for something specific, a certain flavor.
Right. I think a lot of us can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more the idea in your head of how good it tasted last time you had it, and you think you're going to relive that experience again.
And, hey, sometimes you do relive it, right?
Sometimes, but not all the time.
What's your big craving?
My big, well, definitely be something sweet. Okay, I know what it is. And I have a shameful look on my face. You know those double stuffed Oreos? Do you know that they make triple stuffed Oreos now? It's not just the actual Oreo, it's the frosting part in the center that I love. I guess just because it's a pure, it's like pure sugar.
Yeah.
With a bunch of preservatives in it. I'm not sure why. I don't allow myself to eat that stuff very often. But if I crave something in particular, it would definitely be a double or triple stuffed Oreo.
Yeah, you know they are quite a invention, aren't they? The Oreo cookie.
Well, yeah, but you know what? If I don't buy them, and this works for me, this will work for anybody. If you don't have them in the house, the odds are so much more in your favor that you're not going to eat them.
Right, because it's availability. If it's there, yeah. You will eat them, even if you don't want them. And that mm-hmm. I have fallen victim to that as well. You know, I think it's worthwhile pointing out that it doesn't matter if you're some sort of fitness or fat loss guru or some sort of, athlete or somebody who you feel to have good self-discipline. The truth of the matter is, if it's there, you're likely going to eat it, right? I mean, you can resist it for a certain period of time, but eventually the food always wins.
Yes.
Right.
So get rid of that leftover Halloween candy from 6 months ago or 4 months ago and let's start fresh.
Yes. Okay. So the four reasons are hunger, boredom, availability, and craving. Today, we're going to talk primarily about hunger, right?
Okay.
And we'll tackle some of these other ones in future shows. But today, we're just going to talk entirely about cravings. I'm sorry, about hunger. Sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So let's start with the first step to controlling hunger.
Mm-hmm. Number one, stick to a schedule. So kind of have an idea mapped out in your head of, okay, well, most of us are trying to get 5 or maybe 6 small meals in a day, right? That's what we generally recommend. Usually people know what they're going to have for breakfast because it's the first meal of the day. You kind of planned out what you feel like eating and what's available in your cupboard or in your refrigerator. We kind of know what we're going to have for breakfast. Make sure that you plan out the rest of your day. What are you going to take for a snack if you have to go to work for the rest of the day? And plan what you're going to have for lunch. Make sure you have a schedule of, you know, eating every 4 or 5 hours. Know what you're going to be eating.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of us have a pretty set schedule Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then things kind of go a little bit awry on Saturdays and Sundays, right? So we've got to really compartmentalize our lives in that way. You know, we say, okay, well, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, here's my eating schedule. You know, I don't know how many people out there own cats or dogs, but when you get your pet on a certain schedule of eating, when that time rolls around, you know, cats and dogs don't have wristwatches. So they just, their bodies just kind of know when it's time to eat. And they'll stand there and they'll stare at you. You'll see the saliva dripping from their mouths. You know, if you have a cat, they will typically try to smother you.
Yes.
Until you feed them. And you know, I've known people who the cat wakes them up every single morning at exactly the same time by sitting on their face. You know, because it's time to eat, right? They're in that schedule of eating. And the human body really is no different. Is we get into these natural biological rhythms. Mm-hmm. So if we can set our life up so that we eat at specific times, even to the point where you may program into your cell phone a schedule so that it rings or it beeps at certain times so that you know it's time to eat, then your body will naturally get into the rhythm. And then when you're passing by, let's say, the McDonald's on the way home, you won't necessarily feel like eating. Right. That's
right.
The power of setting up an eating schedule.
And you know what? That's what a lot of bodybuilders do, especially first timers that are getting into it. They will set an alarm on their phone. Oh, time to eat meal number 3. Oh, time to eat meal number 4. Same thing with drinking water. You know, they want to make sure they get in their copious amounts of water during the day. So, you know, I know a dentist there in Baltimore who is also a bodybuilder, and he's got a packed out schedule. Well, on the hour, every hour, his little alarm goes off. He picks up a 16-ounce bottle of water and drinks it. So that way he makes sure he gets all of his water in. Now, that is a way to set yourself up, but pretty soon you can start relying on your body's own signals to get hungry at those times or to get thirsty at those times.
Right.
And so I think our body loves a routine.
That's a really good point is that once you get to that point where your body has kind of developed its own internal schedule. You won't necessarily have to rely so much on the clock. Now, you may want to. You may want to keep your cell phone ringing at certain times. That's all fine. Keep it going. That works for me. It may not work for you, or you may not like being reminded every you know few hours to eat. But you got to start someplace, and that's probably a good place to begin.
Yeah, it's a great tip.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the next one is going to be step number two, which is fiber with every meal. Eat fiber with every meal. Let me give you guys some statistics. These are technically aren't statistics, but the average American consumes about 15 grams of fiber per day, right?
Which doesn't sound like very much at all.
It's not much, because even the government recommendations, which typically are far lower than optimal for the body, even the government recommends we consume 25 to 35 grams of fiber per day. But the average American doesn't even get close to that amount. But when we take an even deeper look and ask, well, what did a caveman eat? What did our Paleolithic ancestors eat? The amount is staggering in comparison, Blythe. And that is the average cave person, caveman or woman, consumed about 100 grams of fiber per day.
Wow. That is crazy, because we're just not eating as many fruits and vegetables. We rely on the processed foods for snacks and meals. It's a shame that all the simple meals are always, not all the simple meals, but the prepackaged meals are so full of processed things. You know, it really does set a new bar for us if you look back at how people used to eat when everything, you didn't have the option of processed foods.
And that brings us to the big mistake, right? Which is that most people, when they think about fiber, they think about the grains.
Yes.
And they turn to grains for the fiber. And there's a big problem with that mentality. Because what ends up happening is we start compartmentalizing a particular nutrient within that food. For example, if we look just at the fiber, well, grains may appear to be a good source of fiber. But we can't just look at the fiber, because other things come along with that fiber in a grain, specifically starchy carbohydrates, right? So the carb strain that you find from grains has a tendency to outpace the fiber benefit within that food. So kind of explain what that means.
Well, here's an example. Okay, you see, and I'm not picking on any particular company, but the General Mills foods, I've been noticing, because my kids watch all the cereal box commercials, that they now say 100% whole grain, and then it says, you know, half of your daily amount of fiber recommended. But the problem is that all the other junk that's in the cereal, the damage of that outweighs the benefit of the fiber in the cereal. So it doesn't matter if you're feeding your kids, you know, 25 grams of sugar at breakfast, they're getting 3 grams of fiber.
Right, exactly.
Those are the things that we need. We need to be looking at those things. Don't let the marketing strategies of contains 100% whole grains get you to buy those products. Natural is always better.
Right. You want it to be natural. You want it to be, and by natural, you mean fruits, vegetables, nuts, meat, eggs, things like that. These are what we call prime foods, because they're basically one ingredient foods.
Yes. Okay. Mother Nature's inventions.
Right. And when you hear that a cereal contains is high fiber, they're not necessarily talking about it in comparison to other prime foods. They're talking about high fiber in comparison to non-whole
other
grains,
cereals,
such as like a white flour kind of thing, which has almost no fiber.
So they might.
It's high fiber in comparison to that. But when we talk about looking at a diet of a cave person who didn't have grains, who didn't consume grains on a regular basis, you know, they consumed 100 grams of fiber primarily from fruits, vegetables, nuts, and things like that.
Right.
So that's fiber. So far we've done stick to a schedule, consume fiber with every meal. And by fiber, we mean what?
Actual fiber, natural fibers, fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts.
Very good.
Not grains, no starchy fibers.
Or at least don't make them a primary component of your diet.
Thank you. Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you know, oatmeal is another example. Oatmeal is a grain, and yes, it's high fiber. It has a good amount of soluble fiber in it, and probably of all the grain options, that's one of the better ones. But you don't want to make that a primary component of your diet. You don't want that to be everything, right?
There you go. Yep.
Okay. Let's go on to number three.
Eat plenty of protein. And this is something I'm always hammering out there. Eat plenty of protein. I tell people who are working towards a higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet to just start focusing on the amount of protein they're getting into their diet, because it's really, really easy to get our carbs. It's fairly easy to get our healthy fats. If you're picking natural foods, it's very easy to get those things. But it's harder to get the amount of protein that will, number one, satiate you, and number two, provide the proper nutrition so you're not losing lean muscle tissue every day.
Exactly. And so, you know, there as it pertains to hunger, there are basically two main benefits to protein. Number one is it's a sustained form of nutrition. I mean, it takes the body a little bit of time and effort to digest protein down. So you get more of a trickle feeding effect. You get the amino acids kind of dripping into the blood in a slower fashion. You compare that to the calories or the nutrients from a piece of white bread, and the body absorbs them so quickly that you don't get a sustained benefit from that. That's why you can eat a slice of white bread and be hungry 5 minutes later.
Right.
Because the body's already absorbed and spiked the insulin, causing the insulin to drop, which then causes hypoglycemia, which makes you want to eat more foods. So protein provides a sustained nutrition. It takes a while for the body to digest and absorb that. The second component is it triggers satiety hormones, right? It triggers the hormones in the body that make you not want to eat, that make you feel full.
Right. And that's important because you eat a meal full of carbohydrates or here's an example, like chips and queso. You could eat those all day long at a restaurant. But if you order, say, a steak and a vegetable or a piece of salmon, say your rainbow salad with a piece of salmon on top, you eat something like that, you're going to feel more full from that dinner because of the amount of protein that it contains.
That's a great example. I mean, that's why Mexican restaurants don't mind giving you free chips, right? Because they know you're still going to order food because it doesn't fill you up.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that's a great point. And you know, there is a study that was done by the University of Missouri. Okay, this was a pretty interesting study because it was done in young girls. They fed these were young girls that were admittedly breakfast skippers. Okay, they would skip breakfast, which we know is a big problem for a lot of people who are looking to lose weight, or specifically burn fat. And what they did was they put them into one of two groups. One group was given a normal protein diet, which contained about 18 grams of protein for breakfast, in comparison to another group, which was a high protein breakfast, and that was 50 grams of protein, which is a pretty hefty dose of protein, right? Mm-hmm. And what they did was it was very interesting. They put them into what's called a functional MRI, which allows us to see the function of the brain while it's being exposed to certain stimuli. In this case, they showed them pictures of food and wanted to see what areas of the brain light up. What they discovered was when the girls were given a high protein breakfast, the areas of the brain that were responsible for food motivation and reward, we call it the reward centers of the brain. Did not light up nearly as powerfully as in the group that had the lower protein meal. Okay, now keep in mind, both meals contained about 500 calories. The one that had the 18 gram of protein simply had more carbohydrates in it. It was a standard breakfast. I think it was like cereal and milk was in that meal. The other one was higher in protein, 50 grams. And what it did was it literally toned down those areas of the brain that are responsible for motivating you to eat. That's pretty fascinating. In addition, in the press release, they said the higher protein breakfast, this is a quote from that press release, the higher protein breakfast led to even greater changes in appetite, satiety, and reward-driven eating behavior compared to the normal protein breakfast. So besides seeing the changes in the brain, they also saw changes in the actual behavior that was associated with that, which is feeling more satiated by food and having less of an appetite.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool stuff, right?
Yeah, that is really cool.
It's one thing, you know, to see those changes in the behavior, but it's also another thing to see that change literally in the areas of the brain that compel us to eat. That's pretty
cool. Yes. Yeah, that's a really cool study. I like that. So the objective is to choose low glycemic, non-grain carbohydrates.
Okay, so this is step number four.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And low glycemic, non-grain carbohydrates. Explain that.
Low glycemic would be something that doesn't contain a lot of sugar. So if you have an option to have fruit, a low glycemic fruit would be like cherries, blueberries, any berry.
Yeah, blackberries.
Yeah, blackberries are great. Mm-hmm. Any berry, strawberries, versus, say, an orange or a banana.
Banana is a good example. I think oranges are probably, I think their glycemic index is fairly low. Bananas and I think grapes are another example.
Grapes are fairly a huge
high
one.
Glycemic,
yeah.
Fruit. Uh-huh. So choosing lower glycemic fruits, mm-hmm. of course, vegetables.
Yes.
Nuts, beans. Mm-hmm.
And the non-grain carbohydrates, meaning, nuts, you could add beans in there, raw vegetables, cooked or raw vegetables, you could have either. Raw is always superior, mm-hmm. I believe. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think, you know, having room for both is good. We know that when you steam vegetables, for example, and you cook vegetables, you liberate some of the nutrients that you won't necessarily be able to access as well in raw vegetables and fruits. I think you're right. In general, raw is best, but it's probably a good idea to have some of those steamed or lightly cooked vegetables as well.
Okay. Yep. Okay, you mean for digestion purposes? Like you get more out of them while you're digesting them?
Yeah, for example, you know, we know that the carotenoids, which are the phytonutrients that give the vegetable its color, mm-hmm. is released and liberated when we steam the vegetables. So it's easier for our body to access and absorb those. Those okay. are the things that we know protect us from cardiovascular disease, have anti-cancer qualities, protect us from skin cancer and other things. So those are things that are liberated and released through mild or light cooking. Obviously, if you overcook it, you're going to have a problem. But
right.
with damaging those nutrients. But light cooking, like steaming vegetables, is fantastic.
Okay. So what we said, fruits, nuts, beans, vegetables. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are good choices.
It's pretty simple. You know, I guess the whole point is you hear this term low glycemic used to describe all kinds of foods, including whole grain carbs, right?
Yes.
And so what we want to do is if we really want to focus on living a very healthy life and really promoting fat loss, then keeping grains to a minimum is going to be important.
I agree.
And again, Blythe, it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't have grains.
Right.
You still consume oatmeal and things like that, right?
Sure, I do. Yeah.
Brown
Are
rice?
You still doing? I'll eat some jasmine rice here and again. I'm just not a big fan of rice. I'm not a big fan of pasta. Carbs, like in that form, aren't my downfall. Sweets would be my downfall. So yeah, being careful for, you know, every once in a while we'll have like Special K in the cupboard or something. And I know that they advertise Special K cereal as like a diet or a healthy, maybe it's a healthier version compared to Trix, but it's yeah. not, but you know, it's not something that I like to keep in my cupboard all the time, but occasionally I'll have a bowl of cereal or something like that. I try to make it early in the day. I try to have it with some form of protein. I try to minimize the impact it will have on my system. But yes, I do enjoy things like that every once in a while.
You know what I crave? I crave Fruity Pebbles.
Really?
Fruity Pebbles. I haven't had them in probably 15 years.
When's your birthday?
My birthday's in May 23rd. So maybe that's a good point. On my birthday, I'm going to have myself a bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
You can have a double-sized bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
Double-sized bowl of Fruity Pebbles.
And be okay with it, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'd be okay with it right now. You know, I could eat that. My body's in pretty good balance right now. And that's a really good point. Okay, so when we're talking about sweets and having higher carbohydrate foods, when your body's in a good shape, when you're generally healthy, when you're exercising regularly, when you're eating in a fat loss friendly way most of the time, you can go and have a bowl of Fruity Pebbles and not have to worry about it because your body can process and handle it. That's kind of a big message with us, right? Is that when your body's in hormonal balance, you don't have to be so obsessed about the foods that we eat. We should never feel bad about eating. We just got to learn the lessons that need to be learned.
Right, and the consistency.
Eat what we would consider fat loss unfriendly foods, right?
Right, and the consistency of eating healthy, you know, like we said, set a schedule. Eating healthy most of the time, having a meal or two, you know, a week once your body is in great balance isn't gonna ruin it for you.
Right.
Now, I get that a lot. As a trainer, you know, my clients say, oh, well, you can eat like that because, you know, I'm some special like person that I am allowed to eat those kind of foods. Now, remember that if I eat 6 meals a day and times that by 7 days a week, that's 42 meals. If one or two of those meals out of those 42 meals is not optimal nutrition, it's not going to make or break me. So I'm kind of at a point where I allow myself to do that. I'm okay with doing that. If I don't feel like it, I don't have to, but I do allow myself that because it makes the rest of the meals easy.
Right. And so we talk about, you know, 8 or 9 times out of 10 eating well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're considering you're eating, you know, 4 or 5 meals a day, then, you know, that means you could probably have a good snack. And this isn't somebody who's generally healthy in the rest of their lifestyle. They're mm-hmm. exercising regularly. They're eating really, really good when they are eating a good meal, you know, because there are a lot of people out there that when we say eat well, we have different definitions of what eating well is.
Oh, yeah. It's all open for interpretation.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, when I say eat well, like a really good solid meal, I mean primarily eating the prime foods, which are yeah. one ingredient foods that are fruits, vegetables, nut, meat, and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a good solid meal right there if it incorporates those foods in there.
Okay, so while we're on the topic of foods, let's talk about high volume foods. Now, this is point number 6, right?
Point number 5.
Point number 5, I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Choose
high volume foods.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
why don't you give us an example of what a high volume food would be?
Okay. The way I would define a high volume food would be a food that has a low calorie content compared to the amount of food that you consume. For example, a donut would be a low volume food, right? Because okay. you get a lot of calories in a small package, right?
Right.
Another really good example is wheat flour. And if we do the calorie content of wheat flour, for example, this is a very, very low volume food because 1 cup of wheat flour has about 500 calories.
Okay.
Right? Compare that to 1 cup of spinach, which is a very high volume food. 1 cup of spinach has 7 calories.
So, right, think about how many cups of spinach you would have to eat to equal the wheat flour. That's undoable. I mean, there's no way.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
doesn't that one example put our difficulty with weight loss right there in a nutshell?
Yeah.
One
Puts
cup
it into perspective.
Of wheat flour, 495 calories. 1 cup of spinach, 7 calories. It's right there.
There it is.
You know?
Yeah, it really simplifies it there, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay,
and,
so we've
so
got...
The reason that when we're talking about high-volume foods, the reason why it's so important when we're discussing hunger is because when we eat high-volume foods, the stomach stretches, right? Because, again, think about how many cups of spinach we'd have to eat in order to get to half of that, you know, to half of that.
That's like 70 cups of spinach. 70.
70 cups. Is that
Isn't
right?
that 70 cups? That's about right.
Is it? Math is not my my forte, so I'm gonna rely on you. 70 cups of spinach to equal 1 cup of flour in calories.
It's 70. It's 70.
Wow. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. So, you know, when you eat high-volume foods, you stretch the stomach, and there are these receptors in the stomach that trigger a hormonal response depending upon how stretched they are. It's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why eating carbohydrates or very high carbohydrate grainy foods doesn't cause us to feel satiated very rapidly. Now, we may feel satiated after we're done a big meal because the insulin spike that occurs causes a change in satiety as well. Insulin does cause us to feel not that hungry, at least for a short period of time.
Right.
But once that insulin level drops, or once the blood sugar level drops due to all the excess insulin that's in there, then our satiety benefit ends there. With high volume foods, when you stretch the stomach with these foods that don't provide many calories, you get the benefit of not being hungry and you don't flood the body with tons and tons of calories.
Right. And you know what? I do have to say that if you fill your belly with, let's say, biscuits or something that you make from wheat flour versus spinach, you're going to feel so much better after eating the spinach than you would if you were to eat those biscuits.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah.
The question is, I mean, the big issue is you know, the difference in taste between spinach and flour containing food. That's what gets us. So, I mean, it's really just a matter of switching or changing our what we're used to. Cave people, cavemen and women, we know we're lean. We know it because we can look at modern day hunter gatherer populations mm-hmm. who live like cave people lived, and what and they're all lean. Obesity is almost non-existent unless we're talking about certain populations where a standard American way of eating has kind of taken over
in
that culture. But if we're talking about a hunter-gatherer culture, they're very, very lean people. Now, a cave person wasn't lean. That's the politically correct term, by the way, a cave person. Cave person wasn't lean because they had terrific self-discipline. Because if we would have put out loaves of bread and pizza and all those, those cave people would have gotten fat as well. The difference is they couldn't even if they tried. And trust me, they tried. They wanted to be fat. They couldn't get fat because they didn't have these high quantities of calories and carbohydrate calories specifically available to them.
Right. Their world was full of high volume foods.
Right. And so the trick, if you can convince yourself of this, if you can convince yourself that, you know what, my lifestyle is not going to include these foods, period. Yeah, that's why when somebody follows an Atkins program, for example, they will lose weight because they live by these hard, fast rules. As soon as they divert themselves from those hard, fast rules, then stuff starts to creep in very easily because they're surrounded by good-tasting foods, condiments, things like that contain carbohydrates and harmful carbs.
Right, every time you go out to eat.
Yep.
You know, even if you don't have it at home, they're still there.
Yeah,
that's the difference, mm-hmm. you know, between an Atkins diet and Paleolithic era. okay, so here's a little tip. Actually, this is the sixth point. I'm going to tell you my tip after I tell you this. Protein shakes. Sixth point is protein shakes. Number one, they satiate. Mm-hmm. Number two, they protect your muscle or they keep you from burning your lean tissue. Number three, they satisfy cravings. And I have a little tip about that one too. And number four is if you choose a shake with 5 grams of sugar or less, you're getting way more protein and very little amount of sugar. Odds are you'll probably, even if you're at a desk job, burn off those 5 grams of sugar very quickly.
Right.
And you're getting probably, if it's got 5 grams of sugar in it or less, you probably got about 20 grams of protein in one serving size. That would be about average for a protein shake. Whenever I decide that I am going to have something, say I'm having a craving for an Oreo McFlurry, okay? Say you and I are talking about Oreo McFlurries and now I just can't get it out of my head and I have to go get one.
Okay.
Then I will have, this is a rule I made for myself and it works for me, is that I will have a protein shake. Doesn't matter if I've already had one that day. I'm going to have a protein shake and then give it like 5 or 10 minutes. And if I still feel like I need that Oreo McFlurry, well, then I'll go get it. But having that protein in my system will help with the impact on my body when I eat that sugary snack.
Right. Or if you eat the sugary snack. I mean, oftentimes,
if I decide to eat it.
Oftentimes, it's a fleeting craving. Like if you can mm-hmm. if you can have a protein shake, for example, a chocolate protein shake, it oftentimes is enough to kind of get rid of at least the severity of the craving.
Right.
That you're having.
And it really does work. I tell everybody I know to try that. Have a shake. Even dress it up a little bit, you know, put a little bit of almond butter or half a banana or something in there to kind of dress it up. Make your own type of McFlurry at home. And then if that doesn't do it, well then heck, go get the McFlurry.
Okay, very good.
Okay, it's a tip. I want everybody out there to try it. Next time you feel like you have a craving that you just can't resist, try having a little protein shake. Give it 10 good long minutes and then reassess.
Right, and also ask yourself, is this really hunger or is this due to boredom, availability of food, or just a plain old craving? You know, cravings are messages that we cannot ignore. If you are having the craving and you do ultimately go and have the McFlurry or whatever thing is you're craving at the time, you got to sit back and think, well, where did I go wrong in the rest of my diet? Did I not eat enough for breakfast? Did mm-hmm. I not get enough protein for lunch? Start really thinking in terms of these six things: sticking to a schedule, fiber with every meal, eat plenty of protein, choose low glycemic, non-grain carbohydrates, choose high volume foods, and then supplement with protein shakes. Where out of those six, if I'm really truly hungry, did I go wrong? And then fix it the next time.
Yeah.
You know, don't beat yourself up for eating the McFlurry this time, but use it to learn from it, right? Use it to learn from it.
Yeah, it's another tool for your toolbox.
Got it. All right, well, that's it. Give everybody the
lowdown
story.
Yeah. Now, we've got a few people that have been asking about the music that we have coming into and going out of our podcast. That is the Grilled Lincolns that we always welcome and leave you to. We love the Grilled Lincolns. You can find them at grilledlincolns.com.
Also on Rhapsody and iTunes, you can find them on there as well.
Okay, very cool. And they do have a Facebook page, as do we, Cut the Fat Podcast, all one long word. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on iTunes as well. Please don't forget to rate us. 5 stars would be lovely.
Yeah, right now we're at about, I think, 560, and we're still 5-star podcast.
Yeah.
I would love to get to 1,000, guys. If we can get to 1,000 ratings, it'll just blow our minds.
Hey, Ray.
Yeah.
I'm going to check and see if you're in there plugging in ratings under other people's names. I'm teasing you. But I do know how goal-oriented you are, and we will reach 1,000.
Okay. We will reach 1,000. That's great. And, you know, somebody had mentioned that they were having trouble finding us on Facebook on one of the reviews. And you've got to search for Cut the Fat Podcast, and it's all together, all one word. It's not separated. So if you do that, you'll find us okay. All right?
And, all right.
Also, check us out at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. You can get to the Facebook page through there as well. And we look forward to doing the next podcast. So we'll see you next time here at Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, guys. Walk again.
Something new. Well, I'm your brother and I hope you do. I don't know what can make you feel your days, but for now I wish you'd just come back when you're okay. Forget your shoes, just wear your flip-flops in the snow. It's hard to really care when you don't